We got some our own heavy topics here. Reality isn't what it seems. Observation and consciousness are necessary elements of what we call reality. Time is not necessarily linear. The past is not necessarily set in stone. And that leads us to the big question: death. Is it illusory? Is it real? Does life go on? We're going to get into that right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Lanza, you do not believe in death and the general understanding the way the rest of us understand it. Make the case.
Well, we believe in death because we've been told we die. And so we associate ourselves with the body, and we know our bodies die, end of story. But biocentrism tells us that death isn't really the terminal event we think. So although our bodies are destined to self-destruct, the alive feeling, the me feeling, is just a 20-watt fountain of energy operating in the brain. But this energy doesn't just go away at death. So one of the surest principles of science is that energy never dies. It can't be created nor destroyed. So, you know, going back to the multiverse, you know, life is like a flowering, an adventure that transcends our ordinary linear way of thinking. So when we die, we don't do so in this random billiard ball matrix of, you know, like space and time being an object, but rather in this inescapable life matrix. So life has a non-linear dimensionality. It's sort of like a perennial flower that will bloom in the multiverse. And so, again, it's very much like some of these experiments that I was describing, like the science experiment. You know, you can say, okay, well, you know, or you have these multiverses, but does that energy really transcend from one world to the other? And so regardless of the choice you make, it will always be you who experiences the outcome, the universe that will result, just like in the science experiment. So again, the linkages between the histories and universes transcend our ordinary ideas of space and time. So again, you know, I think there are multiple ways of looking at that. Another one is simply, you know, when we think that if the world is indeed as physicists believe, observer created, then we shouldn't be surprised it's destroyed with each of us, nor should we be surprised that space and time vanish and all our conceptions of order. So at death, consciousness is gone, but also to the connection of times and places. So where do we find ourselves? We find ourselves very much like Einstein said, that space and time are relative to the observer. Without consciousness, space and time are nothing. So in reality, when you die, it's essentially, without the glue of consciousness, time is essentially reboots. So you could, at that point, take past or future as your new frame of reference. And so time, or I should say death, is a reboot that leads to all the potentialities. And that's, again, the reality that the experiments mandate.
Well,
you know what?
Go ahead.
Another way to actually look at it, you know, when Einstein was referring to the past, present, and future being an illusion, you could think of reality being like a recording. So depending on where the needle is placed, you hear a certain song. That's the present. And the music before and the after, before and after is the past and future. So likewise, every moment always endures, but you have to experience each song separately, piece by piece.
Let's break this down a little bit.
Okay.
We finished the show at 2 o'clock this morning. I go to bed. I have a heart attack. I die. My physical body dies. What happens next?
So I
reboot, meaning what?
What it means is again, each of us, space and time are the relationships of the observer. So when you die at that point, essentially you can take any point of view you want. So in terms of the multiverse, what we could say is that the past and present, future, are all, they're really illusions. They're only connected in a linear way as long as you have consciousness. So if you were to die, the best way to probably think about this is that all the possibilities that you had with or without the heart attack will exist and exist simultaneously. Again, you will always experience all of those possibilities now in the present, but they're not connected like like little blocks on a string. That's where our thinking is very one-dimensional. You got to remember, this is the real problem in a nutshell, is that we were evolved in the forest roof to collect fruit and berries, and that's not a skill set that helps us understand the nature of the universe. And this is why these experiments, you know, are causing so much chaos, is that we just like to see everything black and white. You die, you rot into the ground, and then you turn to some of these religions, the Eastern religions or whatever, and they say no, life and death is illusory. So we gutturally know there's something wrong with this stagnant, static view of the world that science is presenting, so we turn to religion. But I think what's happening now for the first time is that science is now starting to catch up with its experiments that are challenging, you know, some of these sterile ways of looking at things.
So is the same thing true for dogs, bugs,
yes,
amoeba?
I think what's going on here is any creature that has a sense of space and time, obviously if a creature locomotes and it moves, it means that it has a perception of space and time, which means it has the algorithms that are necessary, to obviously experience consciousness. And so, yes, any creature, a higher vertebrate that has the ability to discern and operate in space and time, and we can obviously project from that they obviously have a sense of space and time and therefore operate by the same mechanism. They're the same biological creature.
I guess what I'm going to ask you next would require some guesswork on mm-hmm. your part, because I can't imagine how anyone would know. You had mentioned about the 20-watt bulb that's in my head, or that the energy that basically is me. Mm-hmm. We know that science says the energy continues. I guess what we don't know is that it continues as me after the physical body is gone. Do you have an idea on that?
Well, again, yeah, no, if we go back to like our science experiment, we know, for instance, when that experimenter decides whether to flick the switch on or off, he actually determines the past. He determines the history of that event and what universe he is in. But it doesn't really matter whether he turns it on or off. He is going to be basically the person that experienced the outcome. So again, you can think of it as basically like the 20 watts of energy as hollow projecting either this or that result on the screen. So again, whether the experimenter turn the beam splitter on or off, it's the same battery, it's the same agent that's responsible for the projection. So you will experience it, but again, your memories or whatever are going to reflect who you specifically think you are at that moment. But it doesn't mean that the who am I, that feeling, is any different. It will be you sensing it's you in all of those scenarios.
And I wonder, do I know that I'm dead and that I've rebooted?
No, you don't. Just like you don't know that you're rebooted now as you're talking to me. So no, that's exactly it. The best you're going to come now to knowing it is understanding it here in one of the universes. So again, right now, you're trying to make sense of it, but you won't obviously have direct memory of what's in your brain in the future. You may have very similar experiences, and if you got killed going off the road in black ice, you may not, you may continue on and live your life, but you're not going to know that there are all these other possibilities.
So it is sort of consistent with some Eastern religions and the karma, reincarnation. You're making the choice about where to reboot and what time and where, what stage you're at.
Yeah, I think another way is to think of when you you think of projecting your love and your hope to whoever you want, and in a way you truly do transcend the universe in that sense. So for instance, if you reboot, you really are in a privileged position to really say, okay, you can pick your daughter or your son as your new point of reference. So you die, and you can always know that your child is going to go on the way you know. But on the other hand, you also have the ability to know that at the same time, that if you die, you're not really dead, that you're no more dead than you were before you died, if that makes any sense at all. In other words, that if we talk about, again, the multiverse, to make this conceptually easy, it's that all of these possibilities exist simultaneously. And it's only a flaw in our way of thinking that we think space and time have to be connected, again, like little pearls on a string. Again, they're connected in a nonlinear dimensional way. So again, this is where the multiverse theory came up with to begin with, is that we know that literally every particle has a whole range of possible states, and that when you observe it, you collapse one particular outcome. But we do know, depending on how it's observed or not observed, that you will have a different outcome. But all of those things exist, and that is where the multiverse comes from. That they're saying that, of course, they all exist, but they, you know, they're obviously, you know, not things you're going to experience at the same time, because it just defies the nature of reality.
In your book, Biocentrism, you mentioned that this the question of death hit you on a personal level when your sister died, and I'm just, and that you you went out and talked to the rest of the members of the family. When you came out and talked to the members of your family about the departure of your sister, did you make this presentation? Did you say, "Don't worry, she's not dead"?
Well, you know, obviously this is a very highly intellectual thing to understand.
Sure. Sure.
And so, you know, you're not in the position to do that. But what I can say is that, you know, yes, that. She, just like in these experiments where it's Schrodinger's cat experiment, the cat is both alive and dead. And you know, and I did make the effort, and I think it is comforting to let them know that, you know, I like to consider myself a rational person, that it's a perfectly intelligent to be thinking that, you know, okay, when you die, that's not the end of it. That in fact, you know, that everything, you know, again, I think of it as the record, you know, that, like Einstein also said, past, present, and future are illusions. They all exist simultaneously, and it's just where the needle is. But where you move the needle doesn't mean that the rest of the record goes away. And so, yes, I think it's a very comforting feeling for people to know, particularly if they're not religious, you know, that it's just not all black and white like we were taught in the school books. You know, you don't just rot into the ground and end of story. That's just so silly, and it's just basically not even consistent now more and more with all the experiments.
You know, it's sort of the history of science. I remember reading at one time, the history of science, the advance of science has been sort of a lesson in humility for mankind, for humankind, because, you know, we were the center of the universe, and then we had the sun going around us, and then that wasn't true, and then we may not even be the only life form in the universe. And we become less and less important the more we learn about the reality around us. This sort of goes in the other direction.
Yeah, well, again, you know, the other thing, too, is, you know, you think about just a few hundred years ago, people used to say, this is, you know, cliche, but the world was flat. And then when scientists or someone tried to say, well, wait a minute, you know, it's really a round ball. But then the people would laugh and they'd go, well, if it's a round ball, you fool, you're going to fall off the bottom. And they didn't have this whole concept of, well, gravity. Well, how would you be at the bottom of the globe without falling off? And I think that's more or less what's going on now, is we're turning the world inside out. And you're right. You know, one of the big criticisms that I often hear is, oh, this is, you know, not biocentric, it's egocentric. We're making ourselves the center of things. You know, and that, you know, or my sister, when she died, they're saying, well, I'm just trying to grasp at straws, to make sense of it. I'm actually totally trying to look at this from a rational way and just to make sense of the facts. I'm not predisposed to it being this way or that way. Quite honestly, I'm very happy with the life I've lived. I have no real desire to live anymore. So it's not a wishful hope on my part. It's simply just trying to make sense of all the observations, all of the facts, as intelligently as we can. And unfortunately, that doesn't always occur, particularly in science, where you know, people have their entire life vested the way they think in a certain worldview, and it's very, very hard to you know, once you've gone through all of this education, to just throw it away. It's just like a religion, you know. It's like asking a priest about stem cell research. They're not always going to be open-minded about it.
Well, you're going to get a lot of people who are mad at you. I would imagine you already have a lot of people mad at you from all sides of the spectrum, right?
You're absolutely right. I mean, you know, when you challenge people's views, it causes trouble. And, you know, my main goal here is just simply to make people think, you know, that, well, maybe things aren't as black and white as you think. And, you know, and as you mentioned about the history of science, I mean, this is, you know, every generation has lived and died in illusions, and it has evolved. You know, back before Einstein, you know, the world was looked at a certain way, and then, you know, then quantum theory came along and then sort of, you know, bumped Einstein, and there's no reason to think that that isn't going to continue, hopefully, as we continue to accumulate more knowledge.
In the book, you have a chapter about consciousness, about how it's a mystery. Do you have a definition of consciousness, what it is?
I think, you know, what science tries to say is, you know, okay, you have this brain, this glob of cells, and, you know, it's just part of that circuitry. But of course, the real problem isn't, you know, that there's a neural correlate in your brain. It's how do you right now feel the alive sense? And the truth of the matter is that is tangled up with understanding the universe, and it's tangled up with understanding quantum physics. They're all part of a process. So consciousness actually is the process of space and time. It exists in it. So again, I don't think of consciousness as this object that's out there. Again, it's a process that involves your consciousness. And so consciousness is indeed that process by which we establish a physical reality. So space and time, as I mentioned, are tools of the mind. And in the process of establishing you right now experiencing something, you by definition then have now, as the observer, created the logic for that. So you're talking to me, but at the same time that you're talking to me, there's an actual logic for that occurring. And then that is when you start extrapolating, you know, and start saying, okay, this is what's happening and this is what's happening. But consciousness is indeed the process of what you right now are experiencing. And in that process, that is why all the physical events that we are aware of are actually observer dependent. I don't know if I'm making any sense. This is
Yeah. Well, it is complicated. It's fun to talk about it, though, and kick it around. The central question, I guess the biggest question, the one that science and religion have been unable to really answer, is what came before X? You know, Big mm-hmm. Bang Theory, what was there before the Big Bang? Well, there was nothing. There was no time, space, or anything. And my brain has trouble with that. And the same thing is true for religion. Well, God created all this. Well, where did God come from? And I don't have a good answer for that one either. Does biocentrism answer either of those?
Yeah, so what's happening is all knowledge of the universe, all knowledge that you possess, and I hate to reduce it to something that's cliche-ish, is relative. So everything has to be you think of something and nothingness. Well, how can you have a state of somethingness unless there's a state of nothingness to compare it to? Or, you know, order and chaos, you know, they're really just different parts of the circle. And, you know, and Socrates a long time ago once said, define your terms. So I think we get ourselves into these traps because of our language, because of words that aren't making a lot of sense. So when you think of before and after, again, you're getting tripped up because we've been taught that space and time are these hot, cold objects out there. And as soon as you get away from that, you no longer have this problem of before and after. You realize that each of us is like a bubble of reality. Each of us, that, again, I like to think of it in just the guttural sense. How are we alive now on top of all of infinity? You know, it just makes no sense that you know, one in gazillion chance that every single thing that could ever have happened, you know, not just to mention all those laws that we talked about in the universe, but all the events that happened in evolution. You know, think about the meteor that fell to the earth that wiped out the dinosaurs that allowed for humans to evolve, or the Neanderthals that never happened. All of these gazillions of events that had all happened exactly right for you to be here talking to me. It's absurd to say that's just a mere accident. When you say something is just an accident, it means usually that you just don't understand why. You don't know what the reasoning is. And I think with biocentrism, more and more of that puzzle comes together, because then we do indeed realize that, yeah, you're not just here on top of infinity. That's just the way it seems to us. That's the way we perceive the world. And that when you die, again, you cannot connect one life with another life as though there was this invisible matrix out there and everything just happens out there ticking away like this big machine, because that isn't real. That isn't the real reality.
Wow, that's a lot to chew on, and I guess you could say that that's what maybe why we're here is to kick these kinds of topics around, to think about them, to figure out who we are and what our purpose is. And you've certainly given us a lot to chew on. Dr. Robert Lanza is my guest. When we come back, we'll be opening up the phone lines. I know there's a lot of folks out there with questions, so stay with us here on Coast to Coast AM. So, can we capture time in a bottle? Maybe so, says my guest, Dr. Robert Lanza, author of the new book, Biocentrism. It'd be like putting the needle on the record player back to the beginning of that Jim Croce song, or to hear a different part of it, to play it again. Death, like reality, is illusory, he says. When we come back, we go to the phones, and I know a lot of you have questions. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for being with us, everyone, tonight. We're going to the phones with your questions for Dr. Robert Lanza, Wildcard Line, Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut. Hi, Bill.
Yes, hi, Doctor. Hi, this is Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut. I'm a scientific-minded atheist myself, and I have two quick, fascinating questions for you. I'll ask them together and then hang up and listen to your answer.
Okay.
Question number one, considering ETs, whether they're UFOs or ETs, extraterrestrials, trillions of miles away, light years away, when these intelligent beings that are undoubtedly out there, question number one, and they observe quasars or black holes or whatever, how does that affect us humans? And question number two, if intelligence or consciousness can be described as intelligent energy, and since, as you said, energy cannot be created or destroyed, A, you don't need a God to create our minds, because it exists always, and we don't die, as you said, when the body dies, but you also, like I said, don't need a God to create us in the first place.
Yes, so on your first question about E.T., I think that E.T. would be no different than you looking up at the sky. And so, again, when any extraterrestrial intelligence or human or an animal observes something, that reality is collapsed. And together with that, together all the spatial temporal logic, and that also includes the individuals who may have been part of that past. So it doesn't mean that they will necessarily change your timeline, because, again, space and time are relative to each individual observer. So that ET may collapse something, and indeed that reality becomes real to ET. Your reality is real to you, and the mistake we often make is that this intersubjective objectivity that we think of, you know, in our science books, doesn't really work that way. So again, observer dependent reality, it begins and ends with each individual observer. And as far as consciousness, you're absolutely right. You don't need a God to collapse that. You're living proof of that. I mean, the fact that your consciousness exists is an information system that exists in its own right. It's just the nature of the creature. And where we stumble into problems is that when we say there's something in nothingness, and they're just simply not understanding the complete circle.
Thanks, Bill. Wild card two, Jim in the truck. Jim, I hope we're making your drive a little more interesting tonight.
Yeah, I don't need these two. There you go. Up here in Toronto. And I'm out of New Bedford, Mass, and I listen to you guys all the time, call in all the time, too. Yeah, I just want to say, I'm a Christian, and I don't believe what this guy Robert's saying, and I agree to disagree with them, but the Bible says that it's appointed unto man once to die and then the judgment. So you could go to one of two places. And the way I believe that is that I know that I'm just a creature and I'm not the creator. I know that the job's taken. So I understand God's real by the prophecies that are coming to pass today. But if you, what do you basically believe, Robert? You believe that there's reincarnation? Is that what you believe?
Well, what you need to understand is whether it's science or religion, we're very primitive creatures. We're like chipmunks and squirrels. We can only comprehend the universe to a certain degree. So your religious beliefs that you have about judgment and being punished or not being punished, there's an element of truth as much as we're able to grasp. Likewise, there are elements of science that are correct. And again, we can talk about the Eastern philosophy about reincarnation. So again, We are very primitive creatures, and there are elements of truth depending on how you define your terms and how it's framed. So I'm not going to dismiss your belief system, because indeed much of what you believe, there's probably very real evidence that would suggest that there's truth to it. But it doesn't mean that there isn't truth to other ways of thinking as well.
They're not mutually exclusive.
Exactly.
Okay. Thanks for the call out there, Jim, in the truck. Be careful out there on the roads. Bill in Florida, you're on the line with Dr. Robert Lanza.
Hi, guys. My question is, I happen to believe, well, I happen to know for a fact that I've changed some parts of physical reality. I've done it many times, actually. It's not like I can levitate, don't get me wrong, but I have changed reality. Can you explain that? Can you explain how I've done that?
The problem, unfortunately, is as much as my ideas may stretch your way of thinking, in the end, you know, I was trained the old-fashioned way as a scientist, and so the cause and effect seems to, you know, always play out in the world that I've experienced. So I'm not really sure how you're saying you're changing reality. So, you know, yes, indeed, there are ways that you might interpret that, but I'm not sure of the specific episode you're talking about, so I can't really try to give you an explanation.
Bill, if you're still on the phone, on the line there, can you tell us how you changed it?
Okay. I'll give you an example. I've taken a paper towel and turned it into a real towel. How did I do that?
That's a good question. You can do that. I know some people that may want to hire you to sell your product. No, honestly, I don't have an explanation for that.
I can't do it all the time. I cannot do it all the time. I cannot do it at will. But I have exactly done things like that at least 20, 30, 40 times in my life. And I've never figured out how that's possible. But I'm thinking to myself that maybe when you're talking about molecules and you're talking about everything else, that there's a way to do that. And like I said, I've never figured out how I did it. I've never figured out. It's not like it was an illusion. It's not like it was a hallucination. I've actually done it.
Okay. Well, I take your word for it. I just know as a scientist, I haven't encountered that kind of a phenomenon. I'm not saying that it's not possible, just that it's not something that I personally could explain to you.
But, Bill, you'd have a heck of a future here if you had that talent and you could move here to Las Vegas. They'd probably bar you from the casinos, though. Thanks for the call. On the international line, Dave. Hi, Dave. How you doing? What's on your mind?
Hey, good. Thanks. I'd just like to say with programs like this, it's Coast to Coast is the beacon in the dark night. I'm telling you, guys are great.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the religious vein about Romans 12:2 says that God has a good, acceptable, and perfect will, which means there's like three wills, which would kind of make you think you have more than one reality if he has a good, acceptable, and perfect will, if anybody wants to look that one up. But what I wanted to mention was an incident that happened to me. I had a near-death experience where I almost died, yet my mother and twin sister had a premonition that night that they were going to get a call the next day that I did die, yet obviously I didn't. And just the last question I was going to say, the question I was is that if we can have a perfect existence or reality, how can we get that ideal reality? And if I'm in my ideal reality now, are you guys just bit players in it, or are you guys in your ideal reality as well as me?
Hey, this is my movie.
Yeah, I think a lot of, you know, what you're speaking of, you know, more has to do with meaning, you know, and choosing the things that are important to you. And, you know, and that's really an individual thing as to what each person considers to be of most value in their life.
You know, he mentioned near-death experiences, premonitions, a topic we've talked about a lot on this program, ESP. All these things, time slips, things like that. Are there these aberrations where these different realities intercede on our own, do you think?
Yeah, I think that there's no question that you can, you know, have distortions of space and time, and, you know, any sort of person who may have taken LSD or something, you know, would know, or even if you had some alcohol, that you had a distorted sense of reality that clearly There are ways of perceiving what's going on different than the way we're perceiving them today. But what I can also say is that, you know, through evolutionary biology, that animals probably sense things, and, you know, the more primitive ones in one dimension, and then a little higher two dimensions or three dimensions. So that, you know, how we experience space and time and what's going on, there'd be a lot of very interesting turns and twists, and I think, you know, the physicists can attest to, you know, they talk about one-dimensional cracks in space. I'm not sure I agree with all of this, but there's a lot out there, you know, with the string theory, and you know some of these theories actually envision, you know, six dimensions curled up at every point in space like soda straws. You know, again, these are mathematical theories, and how they translate into our everyday world, you know, you'd have to ask them. But, you know, my guess is that they're only under very extreme conditions.
Okay, east of the Rockies, Dave in Kentucky. Hi, Dave.
Evening, gentlemen. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, couple of quick comments. First of all, with the reality being based on the perception of the observer,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't that kind of mean that all religions are true?
Well, when I mean observer determined, I'm not really meaning, you know, that you actually create the reality you want. What we mean is that the actual properties of particles are dependent on the observer, so that if the observer makes this or that decision, it will impact those particular properties. Again, whether, you know, you're discerning the location or the momentum of a particle. What it doesn't mean is that, you know, you can go out there and just make whatever reality you want, because there still are the laws of causality and you know, the interactions that you and I know occur in our everyday life.
Okay. Understand. There was a comment you made earlier
mm-hmm.
about how, you know, if gravity was just a tiny bit different,
yes,
it would change the properties of the universe and there would be no us.
Right.
And such. I've always thought that was kind of a backwards way of looking at it. Not so much that the universe is developed perfectly for us, but that we adapted perfectly to the universe as it existed.
Well, what we're saying by these constants, and you mentioned gravity, is that there wouldn't be a universe for us to adapt to. In other words, if the gravitational constant was ever so slight, there wouldn't have been stars, there wouldn't have been all the things that we know in the universe. And then you can look at, again, one after the other parameter, one after the other law, all four of the forces of nature, and what you find is that they're just simply the probability that there would even be a universe is so infinitesimally tiny, if you said it was random, that there would be nothing for us to evolve to. So this is why, you know, there's a concern. You know, John Wheeler had what's called an anthropic principle, which is saying the observer participates in that reality. But this is why people were saying, you know, there's a God, that this is an intelligent design, because our current scientific model doesn't explain those. And yes, I know where you're coming from when you say, well, okay, we, you know, just evolved to these things. But we're talking about the actual laws of the universe that could be any value, and yet they're precisely this or that at every step of the way. And so the question is that is almost statistically an impossibility to have occurred.
Dave, thank you. Those were good observations. West of the Rockies, Luis in San Diego. Hi, Luis.
Hi, how are you doing tonight?
Okay.
Hello. Yeah, I wasn't sure if this was the right kind of concept, but as far as time is concerned, I was thinking not to the left or the right, or kind of time is above us, and like, say, going back in time or going in the future, is it being able to get into that place that time is, so you could go back in time or go in the future in time, but we just don't. We don't have enough knowledge to do it right now. He's fascinated by the whole thing of time travel.
Yeah, I think, again, you know, you're touching on an interesting topic, and that is that space and time indeed are algorithms in our mind. And once we understand consciousness and how we put this whole thing together in our minds, that's where neurophysiology will come into play. So we'll once eventually understand how to make those information systems work, you know, for artificial intelligence. And once we do that, we can tamper with those algorithms, perhaps, so that you could almost think about time in an extra dimension where you could actually walk through time very much like you walk through space. So again, you know, as I mentioned, through evolutionary biology, there are probably animals that experience reality in one dimension, two dimension. We experience it in three. And my guess is should we gain knowledge in, you know, the coming millennia, we probably will know how to manipulate those algorithms so we can do exactly that.
Thanks, Luis. Appreciate it. First time caller, Jacob in New Mexico. Hi, Jacob. Thanks for joining us.
Yes. I'm a big fan, by the way. Two questions.
Thank you.
As far as time and stuff like that, like you said, it doesn't exist or whatever, but innuendos, premonitions, deja vu, does it all relate to like meeting the same person? As far as what I'm getting at here is, are we destined to meet each other along the way? Like, as far as...
Yeah, what's your take on destiny?
Destiny. That's a big one. So I think I could look at that from both directions, depending on the logic. Again, you know, order and chaos is you know, is there a will or is there not? And I think that, you know, there is a destiny from a certain perspective, for sure, absolutely. Is there scenarios where I could think that may not go along those lines? Yes. So I think, you know, a lot of this is from the direction you're looking at that. I know I'm sounding confusing, but it basically depends on your way of viewing what's going on.
Jacob, did he get to the heart of your question? Jacob's gone. Okay, we're going to go to Bob in Eagle Rock, California, on a wild card line. Hi, Bob.
Hey.
Good morning.
Hello.
Or good evening.
Bob. Yeah, it's Robert. I'm in Oklahoma City. I was got a comment and then a question, but I didn't know if this is following along the same lines you're talking about. But you know, with the economy the way it is and everything, I was at work one night driving around downtown here, and I told my coworker, I said, you know, we really need another skyscraper on our skyline. And they're building one of the top 10 tallest skyscrapers west of the Mississippi right now. And this happened about 6 months, and I didn't read anything in a paper about it or anything like that. And now all of a sudden we're getting a skyscraper. I've been here all my life, and they haven't built one since I've been alive, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm 40 years old. And then another instance is like on the west side of town, there's this old AT&T plant that shut down when, you know, AT&T went bust.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, I it would be really cool if I could buy this property here and turn it into a mall. They're building a mall there now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Now, what I'm wondering, is there a way to hone these skills to make it into that you can change reality to benefit your own destiny? Right? Because
right.
I have a lot of ideas that I want to do. Like I said, I would have liked to build a mall there, but it didn't happen for me. Somebody else is doing it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like I can speak things and then they happen. It's really odd. And there's several people that witnessed it, and they're like, man, that's just really weird that you said this and now they're doing it, right?
Well, let me add to Robert's comment there for you, Dr. Lanza, is that is there a mechanism, the same way as that particles at great distance have some sort of an instantaneous connection, there's some way that in this particular reality we occasionally can be catching glimpses of other realities in connection sort of with ourself in some other reality, and where Robert's mall has already been built, he's getting the idea from the other Robert.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, you know, and it's just so much we don't understand.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's a possibility. You know, it's not something that I right now would be able to explain to you or would be able to say how that would happen. I wouldn't rule it out, though.
Tell me this. We've only got about a minute here left. I'm sure a lot of people in our listening audience right now are mad at you, or they have questions. You're not out to convert or convince. I get the feeling you're more out to get us thinking in about 30 seconds.
Exactly. That's exactly what this is. It's to open people's minds, to get them to start thinking about these things, and to realize that things aren't exactly the way they may have been taught to them in their school books. And
all right.
So, yes. think.
Dr. Robert Lanza, thanks very much. The book is called Biocentrism. I think it was really interesting. I appreciate you coming on the program, and we'll have you back again sometime.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right, everyone, stay with us. David Politis is going to be here next to talk about his book, Tribal Bigfoot, and some new forensic research he's conducting. Don't go away. More to come on Coast to Coast.